across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
On this Tuesday, March 26th, along with Greg Bach, Kristen Lyerly joining us from a family vacation. Nice of her to chime in on some important news in a couple of minutes. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot is standing by, too, with the forecast. But first off, it's the Civic Media Ride into Spring contest. And as we do every morning at 7:07, we give you a keyword that you're going to text back to us. And that is your entry for the contest. So get that Civic Media app out. Dial up one of the radio stations, use the text feature where you can text the station or call the station, use the text, and text this word back, trip, T-R-I-P, trip, like a vacation, trip. You'll get a new word at 10 a.m., also at 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. There are four daily winners, one for each contest hour, to possibly get an overnight getaway to Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells. Everybody who enters could win one of a couple of different grand prizes involving patio furniture, a 3-in-1 blender, brand new bicycles. Stay tuned for more throughout the day for your chance to win. But again, this morning's 7 a.m. keyword is trip. Text that through the Civic Media app, and hopefully we can make you a winner. Coming up later this hour, we'll be talking about Northland College up in Ashland. They are faced with a daunting task of raising millions of dollars to keep the campus open. We will talk to a couple of supporters about the efforts taking place up there. As I mentioned, Dr. Lyerly previews today's arguments before the U.S. Supreme Court about medication abortion. And then Chad Holmes is off today, so Jim Santel will join us about his Saturday morning show across the Civic Media Radio Network. It's got a new name and kind of a spruced up mission, and we're going to talk about that along with some legal matters involving the former president, which is right up his alley, given that Jim Santel is a former U.S. attorney. All right, so all that ahead, but first we've got to tell you that with Brittany Merlot here, we have people that chime in on Facebook, and you are welcome to do this as well, is tell us where you're at and what kind of conditions you got. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. It is 46 degrees, had rain most of the night, and I love you playing that great music before 7. Well, thank you, Rob. Appreciate that. And Roger, good morning from Stevens Point. 48 degrees, only an inch left out of 7 that fell here. The snow is all gone from outside my parked vehicle. Same thing here. We had 10 inches. It's down to, hang on, got to open the curtain over here. Maybe 2-3 inches at best. Brittany's got all the details on where we go from here. Good morning, Britt.
Good morning. And it was kind of relaxing, though, to hear that rain while you were in bed. Kind of didn't make you want to go to work, right? Oh, it's kind of, right? But it's a soaker out there. We're already seeing nearly an inch and a half of rain that has fallen into the Antigo area and just north of that. Same thing, even working its way east or westward across the state into Eau Claire. You've seen some heavy rainfall amounts, and we've still got more to go. But the bigger story is for all the way up north into Douglas and Bayfield counties there. They are getting hit right now with sleet, a wintry mix, very icy conditions that is flipping over to snow as well. So right now in the very northwest corner of the state, looks like Superior is getting some snowfall accumulations where they could see another 3 to 6 inches today of snow accumulation. Meanwhile, some ice could be accumulating as well, up to about a quarter inch. And I don't like to mess around with ice. It is very, very dangerous. So for everybody else throughout Wisconsin, getting regular rain, count your blessings. But do keep in mind that there could be some minor flooding going on as those rivers start to rise over the next few days. So prep now while you can. But temperatures today, if you're along Lake Michigan, they are going to climb into the mid-50s. Well, a little spike, I should say. Central Wisconsin will get into the upper 40s today. And northwest Wisconsin, you can't wait to get below freezing to flip that wintry mix over to regular snow. So be safe up in northwest Wisconsin, but those winds are going to be whipping and it's going to get cold tomorrow.
All right. Colleen chimes in from De Pere, says all the snow that fell there is melted already. And I know it was already 50 in Madison this morning. So some places are going to get a nice little warm up today.
Yes, we are.
All right. We'll look forward to all of that. Brittany Merlot, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You as well.
All right. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Mitch Landrieu, the Biden campaign co-chair and a former senior advisor to the president for infrastructure coordination. He's the former mayor of New Orleans. He is touring Wisconsin to highlight infrastructure investments that improve Wisconsin jobs, the economy, public safety, and he will join the program tomorrow morning. We were also originally slated today to talk about the prospect of new year-round agricultural visas for undocumented immigrants and how vital that would be here in Wisconsin. We're going to have Hans Breitenmoser on next week. We're looking at maybe one or two other guests as well about a potential development. Basically, it's a congressional working group that has come up with some recommendations for a year-round agricultural visa. Getting it through this Congress might be too much to ask, but we'll get details on that coming up next week. But coming up today in the U.S. Supreme Court is potentially a landmark case in that, Kristen, I'm sorry. You had your hat on for National Wear a Hat Day. I totally didn't shift gear. Let me got my own little beach hat from Jamaica here. Greg, where's your hat?
You know what? I feel
before
really
we get serious.
You know, I don't.
Greg hates being left out like this. I'm sorry.
I feel left out on purpose.
No,
you're not left out because when Craig went to go get my coffee, apparently the barista thought his name was Greg. So
of course, yes, there's Greg written on the cup there.
I'm right there on that trip. I'm right there on vacation with you right now. Enjoy the sun.
If you'd have taken my advice and gone with Kreger's, it might have been a little easier. But anyway, so today in the U.S. Supreme Court, there's going to be a case, a potential landmark case. And by landmark, I mean the potential for yet another assault on women's rights to control their own bodies and their own health. Kristen, can you kind of line up what the Supreme Court is going to be hearing arguments about today?
Yeah, so this case is, as you said, Pat, it's called Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine et al. Versus the Food and Drug Administration et al. And this is the case about mifepristone. We've been hearing a lot about mifepristone, whether it's safe. This is the case that was intentionally planted in a one-judge area in Texas with Judge Matthew Kaczmarek, who is known to be an anti-choice judge. It was flawed. The evidence that supported this case was bad, and actually much of it has been removed. And it could be the case that not only takes mifepristone off the market, but destabilizes the entire process that the FDA has for approving drugs. Mifepristone has been on the market, has been FDA approved for 23 years. We know it's safe. We know it's effective. We know that over 5 million women have used this medication, not only for abortion care, but also for management of miscarriages. I use this in my practice all the time, and it makes it so much easier for my patients to get the care that they need. So losing this medication not only impacts my patients during some of the most difficult times in their lives, but will have a giant impact on the public health system here in this country.
Well, and when you say that the evidence is you know, flimsy and sometimes being thrown out, you know, that really doesn't appear to matter if you've got judges who are more based on politics and ideology than, you know, actually following the law and evidence, because this case clearly goes beyond mifepristone, clearly goes beyond abortion, which is a large enough topic as it is. This really gets to the far right's desire to tear down what they would refer to as the regulatory state that allows executive branch agencies like the Food and Drug Administration to keep things safe for us. This is from a mindset that says, you know what, businesses can police themselves. Government should not be in this business. And if they, in fact, deal this kind of a blow to the FDA, and they've been doing the same thing as well to the EPA on environmental issues, but to keep it to what you work on with the FDA, what would this mean writ large for healthcare and, you know, the safety of drugs that are being researched, used, or no longer allowed to be used?
You hit the nail on the head, Pat. The FDA is the agency that makes sure that the drugs that we take to manage our blood pressure, our diabetes,
our contraception, you name it. If you're going to pick up a prescription, it has gone through a rigorous scientific process to get to that point where we know it's safe enough for us to take to promote our health. If the FDA's process is undermined by this case, which could very well be the result, then what happens next? Which other medications will be questioned? How will that regulatory process in the future be impacted? How will development of new drugs be impacted by this? It is really a destabilizing force for our personal health care. And that's why I mentioned it was a public health problem. It is certainly a personal health problem and a very personal health problem. But this really does have the potential to really take down the FDA and make our drugs much less safe.
And that's the healthcare lens. Through the purely political lens, what this is it says when conservatives control government, they're going to say, hey, we want to micromanage this. We want to rule on each particular thing. You see it as well in the state legislature. Right now, Republicans refuse to release money that they have approved in their budget unless each individual project comes back because they want to micromanage. Now, when a Republican is back in charge of the governorship or the presidency, as Republicans did with Scott Walker, they will then grant wide berth with executive powers to do things. But when they don't have the executive branch, they'll do whatever they can to micromanage at the legislative level. And Kristen, I can't imagine a Congress being asked on every little thing that comes before them to determine what you as a doctor get to do with your patients.
Are you kidding? I mean, we have the least effective Congress right now in decades. They can barely tie their shoes. They certainly can't weigh in on all of these little things that really need to be done by scientists, by groups of bodies who are trained to do this kind of work. It is absolutely ridiculous that political interference and judicial interference is preventing us from getting the medications that we need and has that potential to prevent us from getting things as simple as contraception in the future. This is all a big part of the MAGA movement's desire to take away, starting with women's healthcare, to take away our ability to control our reproductive health. And that is incredibly concerning. If you are a woman out there, you should be very worried about this case.
When we come back, we'll talk about, again, the national reaction to Congressman Mike Gallagher leaving, not sitting well with some very far-right Republicans who'd like to just expel him from Congress right now so that they can have a special election. That and more coming up live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Diana Ross turns 80 years old today, but this is not the original. This would be Biggie's version of incorporating it into, Greg loves when I do this, Mo Money, Mo Problems. I don't know who this guy Mo is, but he's got money, he's got problems, he's got a thank you very much, and happy birthday again to Diana Ross. Kristen Lierley is with us this morning. Before I forget, you're going to be back on Thursday morning taking another break from your break, and we'll do our Women Win Wisconsin segment. What's coming up this week?
We're going to talk to Chris Elfheim out of the Appleton area. She's running for Senate, and Chris has been on our show before. She is a dynamo. You might remember her from, what's the name of her previous show that Mark is doing now on Civic Media? Help me out, Pat. It's really good. It's all about being moderate and meeting in the middle and problem solving. Anyway, Chris is going to be on with us on Women.
Are you talking about Rational Revolution?
Rational Revolution.
Okay, there we got there.
Greg to the rescue.
And now my bosses know I know the names of the shows on this network.
Yes.
That's why this is a team effort.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Hey, so getting back to the Supreme Court arguments about mifepristone today, what do people need to know about its status right now?
It is still available. You can still get mifepristone to manage your abortion, to manage your miscarriage. It is safe, it is effective, and it is available. We are expecting a decision from SCOTUS probably sometime in June.
Yes. I always like when people use the abbreviations like SCOTUS and POTUS and all of that. It's like Supreme Court of the United States. People still look at my, what is a SCOWIS? Supreme Court of Wisconsin. Come on. Keep up with us, folks. So now how do I put this? Because I have no faith in these six, you know, far right justices. So I don't even know that it's right to ask about your confidence level here, or if you feel like this is one that even these conservative justices would say, this is a bridge too far.
I have no idea how they will rule, but I can tell you that I think there were three studies that Judge Matthew Kaczmarek based his ruling on, and two of those studies have actually been removed because they were so deeply flawed. The scientific method was just bad. It was clearly wrong. All of the evidence, it is unbelievable in the scientific world how much evidence points to the fact that this medication is safe and effective, how very clear this is that this is about political interference. So I can't imagine a world where they take mifepristone off the market and take away its FDA approval. But on the other hand, that is kind of the world that we're living in right now. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know one thing. We have to keep pressing and working together for things that we know are good and right and are community building.
But this headline, wife of judge on mifepristone case was paid by an anti-abortion group. I mean, there's already this level of corruption among the conservative Supreme Court justices. And like it says in The Guardian here, when former President Trump appointed Texas attorney James Ho to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, lawyers at his law firm had a problem how to replace the politically connected Ho. Turns out they didn't need to. His wife, Allison, moved into her husband's position and his old office and is now getting money from a group that stands to benefit from this decision. It is beyond wild that something like this was not an automatic, you know, disqualifier, did not lead justices or judges to recuse themselves. It's just a different world that we live in now.
It is. It's scary, but it just means that there are opportunities for us to, you know, work together and get it fixed. So friends, this is the call to action.
There you go. Had you heard yesterday that Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia was making waves about expelling Mike Gallagher from Congress rather than waiting till his choice of date, April 19th? Had you heard that from her, that she wanted to expel him?
Yeah, and then I saw what some of the Republicans who are looking at running in that seat said as well. I mean, again, it's politically motivated. Mike Gallagher's a smart guy. He's a really smart guy, and he's a good conservative. He did this with advice of family and friends. He did it with the GOP leadership. He was very transparent about it. They are just so hostile. You know that those mega extremists are the ones who are holding our entire Congress hostage, and that has to change. So again, that is our opportunity in November to just, you know, marginalize them and make sure that they don't have this kind of power that they have right now, where they really control the House with that little slim majority and all of the craziness that they bring along with them. It doesn't make any sense, and it certainly isn't common sense, and it doesn't serve the people.
For folks that missed the conversation in the last hour, Mike Gallagher did not pick April 19th willy-nilly. And that's because had he resigned, I think April 1st was the date.
If he was out by the second,
then there could have been a special election to fill the rest of his term. By waiting till after that, there won't be a special election. The seat will sit vacant from April 19th until January 3rd of next year, when whoever wins the November election gets in there. What do you read into that about, you know, the congressman basically not wanting a special election in there? Is it that he doesn't have a lot of faith that a Republican candidate could hold the district?
Yeah, I think that he sees how dysfunctional the Congress is, and I think he sees that there's really no solution at this point. I mean, I don't know what he actually believes, but, you know, if Marjorie Taylor Greene and that group of mega extremists actually wanted to fix things, work within your conference, figure it out, compromise. There is a way to do this. And if I know one thing about Mike Gallagher, he loves his role on the Select Committee for China, and he really wants to be a leader in this arena. So work together to make it happen. I think he finally just threw in the towel and said, this is never going to go anywhere, and I just need to wait this out so that I can come back at a future date and actually get some work done.
Come back at a future date? Boy, you sound like Eric Hovde now. I just got to wait 12 years, and people will forget that I ran, and they'll forget all the stuff that I said. For folks that didn't hear us talking about it yesterday, my new article is up at upnorthnewswi.com. We found a 2012 Wisconsin Eye interview with Eric Hovde, where he talks about how farmers, you know, today kind of have it easy compared to farmers of the past. You know, those farmers had to work hard. He talks about an obesity tax, basically saying that overweight people should maybe have to pay more for their health insurance. And of course, he talked about, you know, making young people work until they're 72 to get Social Security and Medicare. And then at the end, Stephen Walters asks, well, if you don't win this primary in 2012, are you going to run for office again? And he says, no. He says, no, I'm not going to run again. I don't want to spend my life in politics. Mm-hmm. And here he is 12 years later. So yes, Gallagher could come back in 12 years. That's the whole setup for this.
But the difference is Gallagher is not that guy. I mean, he has put in the work. He has been very responsive with his constituents. And I really, truly believe that he wants to be part of that solution. But this environment is hostile. It's not productive, and it's just not working. And the people who are considering running or have already filed to run for that seat are all part of that mega extremism. They're not part of the solution.
All right. Put that beach hat back on. I hear the ocean calling you. Enjoy a few days, and we'll see you back here on Thursday for Little Women Win Wisconsin. Have a fun day. Thanks for filling us in.
Thanks, guys.
All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about Northland College up in Ashland and how they've got to raise millions of dollars to keep the door open. We'll talk to a couple of supporters next. You're up north. Welcome back. This is Up North News Radio. It's 7:34 on this Tuesday morning, March 26th. And we're going to talk a bit now about Northland College in Ashland. We talked about this with Athletic Director Dan Schumacher back on Friday about the need to raise funds to keep the doors open. A problem that we're finding not just at small colleges, we've seen a lot of the two-year UW campuses either close or make serious cuts, but larger colleges and universities are facing some of the same problems. We talked about how Marquette University is cutting some, I think it was like $30 million over the next couple of years, looking for savings there. It's a big challenge, but for a small school up in Ashland, Wisconsin, I mean, this is truly a community-wide issue as well. And so joining us are two of the supporters of the fundraising effort, Angela Stroud and Kaylin Hall. Kaylin, Angela, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Angela is a professor of sociology at Northland College. Can you tell us a bit about an overview of the challenge, why Northland is facing this challenge, and then we'll get into what you're doing to try to address it.
Sure. As you said, you know, this is something that all higher ed is grappling with, the decline in enrollment. We talk about it as this demographic cliff, fewer people are going to college. And I think for a lot of people, they're just questioning, what is the point of going to college? Why would I go, given, you know, the social and economic realities right now? That's what makes Northland so special. We're not just a typical college. We're a place with an incredible mission about environmental resilience and social justice. And in 2024, I can't think of any issues more pressing and more important than those two. So Northland isn't just a typical place. It's not just another story of college closure. It's about a place that is exactly what the world needs. And we absolutely have to survive this moment.
And Kaylin, can I get kind of an overview from you? Because, again, for all of us that are hearing about it rather abruptly, this is not an abrupt thing. This is something that I'm sure folks in the community kind of had an inkling about, or has it been rather sudden that this came up?
It's
a good question. I think, unfortunately, it was still a shock to a lot of us that are really integrated into the community. From my perspective, as an alum and previous employee of Northland College, there was, you know, it was known that there were some financial challenges, like Angela mentioned. That's common with a lot of colleges across the country right now, especially small liberal arts institutions like Northland. However, I think that nobody really knew quite how dire it was until a couple weeks ago when this really big announcement was made. And so a lot of us were really surprised by how much of an emergency this actually is.
Mm-hmm. All I can think of the parallel to it is down here in the Chippewa Valley, where, again, we know that you know, healthcare is in turmoil, but maybe a few people knew how bad, but it wasn't until HSHS, you know, up and said, well, we're going to close these two hospitals that people said, oh, wait, can we do something about this? Can we do something to help? And this is appears to be what the community in Ashland is doing now. There are websites and activities that are going on. There's one called Northland Forever. There's one called True Northland. Are either one of you affiliated with one or the other and want to tell me about the ways that you're getting the messages out to the community? Angela, we'll start with you.
Sure. Yeah. So True Northland is part of a larger community-wide revisioning of what Northland College is. And our argument right now is one of the reasons we're in the spot we're in is because we have not really organized our entire college around our mission. We have such an incredible mission, but we've tried to figure out how to address our financial problems by looking for money rather than by looking at our mission and letting our mission drive every conversation with donors, every initiative. And so we were set forth to develop a plan for the future of Northland, and we did a community visioning process, and we brought people from campus, but also from our larger community. And we said, what do you want Northland to be? And it's what people have always wanted Northland to be. I've been here 12 years. Nothing is new here, but it's about refining, putting our entire institution on the same page about our mission so that we can move forward in a sustainable way. And so True Northland is the idea that we don't need a new Northland to survive. We don't need to transform. We need to actually live truly who we have always been. And we need our leadership to catch up to that. We need our board to catch up to that. And we need to let our vision, which is a community vision, and it's a vision of really what the world needs more than anything else, to thrive.
Sure. Caitlin, how about you as you look at the community response through these websites and more?
Yeah. So like Angela mentioned, kind of the role of True Northland, I think, has been to really engage the community in coming up with that concrete plan of what does the future of Northland look like? Where do we go from here? On the other side, Northland Forever is a group of alumni that kind of came together from seeing maybe a lack of leadership or clear direction in organizing people around this new plan, getting donations, and really just spreading information. You know, it's a little bit different for people who are on campus or are close to the Ashland community who have been able to attend a lot of these visioning meetings and really be involved in what has been happening over the last couple weeks. But we've also noticed and been hearing from alumni all across the country online, they're really missing a lot of that information and involvement that they want. So Northland Forever is really a group of alumni that got together to provide that opportunity for more people who care about Northland to get involved and really stay up to date with what's happening.
The Angela, the site notes that Northland College is the first in the country to fully integrate an environmental focus with its liberal arts curriculum. So when you talk about staying true to the mission and, again, having more of an environmental focus on its program, is it a fair question for people from outside the area to say, is that just too niche in this environment for a school to specialize to that degree and still be able to keep its doors open?
It's a great question, but I would say absolutely not. We're an environmental liberal arts college, and so we do the whole suite of social sciences, humanities, and natural sciences, but we really focus on the biggest questions of the day. which is, you know, how do we grapple with climate change? How do we grapple with social instability and social unrest? You can specialize and do different things. As a sociologist, actually, my research is about gun violence. So, you know, one might think, well, how does that connect to the environment? And it's because environmental justice is a bigger picture conversation. It actually has all kinds of connections that one can make. So we're not really super niche, but what we are is an institution that recognizes that society is also an ecosystem. So when you see poverty and issues with housing, for example, which our plan, our vision opens up our campus to provide housing for the community, when you recognize that a lack of affordable housing is connected to other issues like a lack of access to clean water. And all of these questions are interrelated. And at Northland, we see them as interrelated, and people then can follow their passions to go and focus on the topic that is most of interest to them. So it's an interesting thing to think of things as niche. When we think of things as niche, what we're actually doing is saying that this topic, this issue exists in isolation from something else. When you think of the world as an ecosystem, you realize how interdependent we all are, how these issues connect. And it's only through the liberal arts in an environmental social justice context that you can really grapple with that and understand its complexity.
So, Kaylin, in terms of, you know, the educational mission versus a business plan, there's $12 million that needs to be raised, you know, right off the top. But then is this sustainable? And is there a search for a more sustainable revenue path rather than, you know, using up another endowment and going back to the community again?
Yeah, I feel really good about the plan that Angela and the folks at True Northland are working through. I think, you know, one of the key items that's been pointed out is, you know, I previously worked in admissions for Northland as well and can speak a little bit to the fact that we have had trouble recruiting enough students to fill the infrastructure of the school. And, you know, there's just increasing challenges with college enrollment generally. And so I think, you know, some of these ideas like purposely making the student body a bit smaller and kind of refining what the academic offerings are. A lot of these changes are going to, one, decrease costs and provide a lot more opportunities for revenue, like the housing opportunities Angela spoke of. A lot of that is laid out in the plan. And we're also, I think this kind of crisis point has alerted a lot more in the broader Northland community of how much support Northland needs right now and how to sustain that into the future. And so we're hearing from a lot more alumni who maybe haven't been donating over the years, who are a lot more committed now to providing those consistent donations and consistent support in whatever ways they can to make sure Northland can continue.
And so obviously approaching alumni is a big part of this, but what about anybody else listening to this who wants to, you know, learn more or try to help? I mean, is this on all the various levels of finding, you know, very large donors? Is it all a lot of small dollar donations? Is it a lot of mid-level from, say, you know, the business community in the area? Angela, is there an emphasis on one thing or another for the community to come together?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things. Sharing our story, so thank you for having us again, is one of the biggest things because you never know who will hear it. Of course, as a nonprofit, we are always going to need foundation help, you know, large foundations that are looking to partner with us and finding solutions for the most pressing problems that we have. But you're right to ask, is this a solution for the future? And we believe that it is, because this really is a plan of decreasing expenses and increasing revenue. But more than that, it's about making us turn into what we always should have been, which is an institution with a coherent mission that donors will want to support. And so those who do want to support us now, you can find us at either Northland Forever or northland.edu as a place to donate. But sharing our story and really asking ourselves in 2024, when we know the state of the environment, when we know the state of the social world, what kind of vision of the future do you have? And engage with us, because my guess is that the future that we have at True Northland, at Northland College, is a future that many, many people wish we could create. But sometimes we don't think it's possible. And we know that it is. And so be in conversation with us, share our story. We never know who will pick that up. But we do have a plan for sustainability. It is real. It is absolutely possible.
I am sure that in the early moments of hearing just how things, how dire things were, there was a lot of anxiety. But Kaylin, are we moving yet into the phase of also feeling something, you know, warm about the response to this so far?
Absolutely. And I think that happened pretty quickly. It has been really incredible to see just how much of our community has come out to support Northland at this time. You know, for the Northland Forever page, we're up to 1,000 followers on our Facebook page. And after 4 days of pledging, we've had folks pledge over $95,000 so far, which is a small chunk of change compared to 12 million. But the fact that, you know, we don't claim to be experts or professionals in fundraising or organizing community like this, and that's where we're at already, is, I think, really impressive. There's a lot of hope and there's a lot of people getting involved. So just to touch on your last question of, you know, what are we working towards? We have volunteers reaching out to celebrities, professional organizations, trying to garner those really big donations, but every small donation helps too. So I really encourage people to donate or pledge if they can. But if not, we have a lot of other ways to get involved.
Well, and I think as well that if you're going to approach large donors, and I know from my own experience, what they want to see is that they're not the only ones you're going to. You're not expecting mm-hmm. one big fish to take care of it all, that you're showing a lot of, you know, small dollar support from a community or a target audience or whatever the case may be. So, I mean, you definitely need one to have the other here. And it just, I think, is a real testament to the folks in the, you know, Ashland Bayfield community that they are willing to start taking this kind of action, you know, to keep their school going. And we wish you all the best, and we want to get updates as much as possible from Kaylin Hall and from Angela Stroud, who join us. And do I have the address correct here? Is it the northland-forever.com address?
That is correct.
That people should go to? Okay, northland-forever.com. To learn more there. Angela, Kaylin, thank you very, very much. We wish you all the best, and please keep us up to date.
We will. Thanks for having us.
You bet. All right. Coming up next, normally on Tuesdays, we'd be joined by Chad Holmes, but he's off this week, and so we are so happy to be joined by James Santel, former U.S. attorney, who's going to talk to us more about his Saturday morning show and it getting a bit of a makeover, not in the HGTV way. Well, maybe. I mean, we'll see what his room looks like on his camera coming up after this. You're up north. But we're all right. There's Michael Jackson with the number one song this day in 1988. James Santel, former U.S. attorney and civic media radio host, joins us now. He's had a weekend show called Morning Cannolis. But given the times we lived in and given his own background as a U.S. attorney, we thought we'd kind of, you know, buff this thing up a bit, give it a shiny new title and a more of a focus on some of the legal matters. And so Amicus is the name of the show with former U.S. attorney Jim Santel. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Pat, delighted to be with you. Thank you for inviting me on. And yes, talking all about radio this morning. Looking forward to that.
Yes. Is it oversimplification to say, well, we've got this former president facing 91 felony counts and 4 different potential trials, and so let's really focus more on the legal aspect of it? Was that a major reason for this, or was there more to the decision to have much more of a legal focus on your weekend show?
I think it was both of those things, frankly. From the time that we first started, Pat, way back in June of 2022, we had an image, a notion that we'd be talking about legal issues very, very broadly. That has certainly become much more defined, to your very good question, around the notion that, yes, now our nation is consumed, perhaps not entirely, but certainly attention is being paid an awful lot more to what is going on inside our criminal and civil courts. Much of it having to do with our former president. The other part of this, of course, that happened right after we went on the air was that the United States Supreme Court began to issue some opinions that, certainly not for the first time in history, but certainly attracted the wild and appropriate attention of constituencies around the globe, candidly, certainly in our state, certainly in our nation. And that has also given an awful lot more focus to this notion that perhaps we should focus it, that is the show, a bit more on the legal trappings. And so to that extent, we do spend a lot more time going in depth, talking about what exactly happened. What does the headline mean? What is the language of the Supreme Court's opinion? What are judges doing? Why are these things happening? And without turning this into a legal class, hoping to be, as the name says, kind of a friend of the listener, amicus coming from the Latin meaning, a Latin legal term meaning assistant to the court, assistant to the community, someone who can give some additional interpretation. That has now become our more refined mission. Absolutely.
Well, and no better time because, again, as we saw right after the 2020 election, you had all kinds of people, you know, raising court challenges. There continue to be efforts to suppress the vote, things that wind up in court that way. Then, of course, there is, you know, not just at the national level, but closer to home, we have a legislative Republican majority that has spent, gosh, only knows how much of our taxpayer money on private attorneys because they keep ending up in court on legal cases, everything from the Gableman quote unquote investigation to open records cases and then some. I think it's a fair question, Jim. Not taking anything away from you, but when I say, how do you keep all the plates spinning? How are you keeping track of all these things?
It is a lot. And like you and our colleagues on Civic Media, Pat, spent a lot of the week, at least along the way, beginning, frankly, Saturday afternoon after our live show is broadcast, beginning to put together ideas. And like you, there's an awful lot that regrettably remains and is even thrown on the cutting room floor during the course of the broadcast itself. We're also, like your show, a listener call-in show. And so we often solicit and get some wonderful, amazingly good and focused questions from listeners. All of that means that while that's important, we do not get to the many, many things that are out there. And even now, I'm thinking this week is another big one, not only for the Supreme Court cases. We've got something going on probably in about an hour from now in Washington, D.C., having to do with abortion rights and mifepristone. All those things during the course of the week prompt me to keep things in a file. And in the end, typically Thursday, Friday, look through that and say, okay, what are the big ones? What are also those things that are not a part of the mainstream review, which we should highlight because they're nonetheless important? And I often say on the air, it's a lot, and it sure is.
I was going to say, even as I'm making notes here, I'm like, well, yeah, the whole notion of the president's effort to forgive student loan debt, you know, ended up with, you know, being in court. And we talked with Dr. Lyerly a few minutes ago about mifepristone and the much larger issue of the FDA. And I may come back to that, but I want to ask you about one or two of these things specifically.
Yes.
And the one, of course, that I think is so frustrating because nobody seems to be giving an answer is, how does a guy like Donald Trump, who we've heard for weeks, had to post a bond yesterday of $464 million in that civil fraud judgment against him if he wanted to appeal? He walks into court yesterday, bippity-boppity-boop, it's reduced to $175 million, and he's got 10 more days to come up with it. I'm at the risk of insulting everybody in the legal profession, but I'm going to say it anyway. Did some judge wake up with a horse's head in his bed? How does this happen?
Right, and so the answers are that your outrage I share, and I think an awful lot of people do this. Obviously, he's appealing that judgment, which is now probably approaching $500 million by the time you add the interest on. An appeals court looks at this, and again, Donald Trump, as does any litigant, which is an important point, has the right to appeal and has the right to have this reviewed by a court, and that's what they did. They also, for what it's worth, stripped away, at least for now, the additional part of the judgment from Judge Engoron that said that the Trump family cannot be a part of this corporation. Put that aside too, which is again the secondary headline here. A lot of dramatic things happened yesterday. And I will say that while the process is not atypical, these results where a court comes in and basically in the appellate process, before there's been briefing, before there's been oral argument, puts all this to one side, or at least I think it's fair to say, gives Donald Trump consideration that, Pat, you and I probably would not get. Not that we'd be on the receiving end of a $500 million judgment, but these kinds of things are not accessible, if you will, in the substantive reign. In the procedural mechanisms, they are, but substantively, we do not have that stature, if you will. And again, contrary to what the former president says, he is not getting mistreated. He is not getting treated badly, if anything, with respect to yesterday's news, with respect to the inevitable, not inevitable, but seemingly inevitable delays in all these court proceedings, including the starts of trials. He is getting consideration. His antics in and out of the courtroom, which do not seem to land him in any serious trouble, all those things you and I would get in a huge amount of trouble with. And I do think there is a growing sense, if it's not already there, that there are different levels of justice being meted out to this man, which the rest of America would not benefit from.
No, well, would not at all. So we have to continue to follow that. The hush money trial that starts in 3 weeks, so many more things. You can catch all of this Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 and rebroadcast on Sundays, Amicus with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. Jim, thanks. We've got to get you back on more often and talk specifically about a few of those things. Now that I know how good you are keeping the plates spinning. So thank you so much. Have a great day.
Anytime. Delighted to be with you this morning. Have a good day. Take care.
Thank you so much. Tomorrow, we will talk to a few more school board candidates with Election Day coming up next Tuesday. Hey, Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Follow us on social media. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.